Welcome to I'm Absolutely Fine, the podcast from the mid-alt that looks at all the glamour and indignity of being a grown-up. This podcast is bravely brought to you by Readly.
Now, we don't know if you already know about Readly, but we do know that our relationship with reading has reignited over the last however long it's been.
Yeah, because it was bad for a while. I mean, I was so shut down, I didn't read a thing between maybe Christmas and May.
I know. Well, thankfully, we're back.
Up and running again.
Yes, we are. And despite all the unlocking, holding on to these little pockets of peace might be one of the things that we want to keep from this whole bizarre situation.
You know, it reminds me of long, long ago when we had time to really pore over this stuff. But it also reminds me that magazines and newspapers can be a kind of glittering, brilliant portal to the world, particularly when over 5,000 titles cost $7.99 a month. Actually, listen hard, guys. Listeners, Readly are offering you a 2-month free trial, so that'll see you through the summer. God, do you remember staggering around weighed down with 3 tons of magazines that'll cost you £1 million?
Yeah, I know, and just saying, okay, you buy this one and I'll buy this one just so you could share the burden.
Not anymore.
Anyway, yes, so here's the science bit. Readly is a digital subscription service for magazines and newspapers. Think of it as a kind of Spotify for all your favourite national and international titles, just there, add a touch on your smartphone or tablet. And it's properly easy to use. I mean, we mean that seriously because we managed it.
Yeah, when she says we, she means me. She's being nice.
Well, anyway, and for offline reading, you can actually save articles just in case you're back on your commute or are managing to have a holiday. One account can be shared by up to 5 profiles on 5 different devices, so family and friends can join the party too at no extra cost. It couldn't be simpler, and boom, suddenly the world is at your fingertips again.
I'm getting deeply stuck into interiors porn, and Emily's New York magazine obsession is in full flow. But maybe you're in a Vogue mood, or you fancy revisiting Hello Mag. You can catch up on The Guardian or go for global power play with Time magazine. But also the Beano and National Geographic Kids and loads of stuff is there for smaller people who need to be quiet. Please be quiet. I need you to be quiet. And thousands more. It's a joy, actually. We're really into it.
Yeah, we really are. Anyway, so to repeat, Readly is offering you 2 months free if you sign up today using our link. Then it's $7.99 a month for over 5,000 titles. And you can cancel any time. Go to readly.com/themidult.
Hi, my name's Annabelle and I'm absolutely fine. But I attempted to go out again on Friday night and I discovered that I have a new speciality, which is that I turn my back on someone when we're in the middle of a conversation and walk away.
God.
And I can't help it. It's panic. I feel so trapped and sort of unsure and freaked out by the idea of having to have a sort of fully functioning conversation that all I can do is remove myself and then pretend that I've kind of gone to get a drink or something and try and re-enter the conversation and ignore their slightly astounded looks and then over-explain myself and say, the thing is, don't be too surprised if I just walk away because I'm panicking and none of it is good or working for me.
Do you think that maybe you should tell people at the beginning of the conversation that you might be prone to do that at any point?
Well, I know that now.
God.
It's a really disastrous night and having lost many potential friendships. Everybody think I'm really odd. Yeah, I know that now. Now I will.
No, it's like, oh,
that
God.
Ship has slightly sailed. How are you?
I'm Emily and I'm absolutely fine, but I'm also panicking. But my panic has got a different flavour. My panicking involves a tent.
No.
I am going camping, which is basically occupying, like 90% of my brain is going, camping, camping, camping. I've only ever slept once in a tent and I'm like 46 years old. It's not so much that I'm dreading it. It's that I'm really worried about how bad I'm going to be at it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I wish I was going to be one of those like hearty kind of, you know, gung-ho game girls who, I mean, I can be game, but, you know, not in this state. Anyway.
But it's a fully equipped sort of campsite / with cabins in North London, isn't it? Well, you're not going to the wilds.
Not going to the wilds, and they're putting up our tent, and that we have beds, but it still feels really
daunting.
The thing
I'm most worried about for you is that if you lie down on the cold, hard ground for the night, will you ever get up again?
It's unlikely. But you know what? Also, I feel like, you know, the story of me wasn't...
No.
Meant to include camping at this
point. We you were meant to be in like Malibu or Provence or something, growing peaches or decorating.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and all power and respect to people who can't. But I mean, if you just think about yourself and how we planned it.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't panned out quite the way we'd expected, has it? What if our lives are like the ongoing, what if they were like the ongoing tale of a very successful sitcom? I mean, I do feel slightly triggered by the total weirdness of the Friends reunion.
Yes.
So you'd start with Pilot You.
Oh, so what would Pilot You look like then?
You can't remember who came up with the premise or the story, but it was a time when nothing felt impossible. So probably a young Leonardo DiCaprio would be starring opposite you, and maybe the theme tune would have been written by Take That. Sure, the plot was clearly a bit chaotic. There would have been a lot of crying, a lot of drinking cider, and sort of lolling around reading Heat magazine.
Pot bitch.
But the promise was there. The pilot was all about the promise, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. Underfunded writers, but lots of energy.
Mm.
So then there's season one, you. So fresh-faced still. Yes. Okay, we're still sticking with fresh-faced, but terrible haircut.
Overplucked eyebrows, obviously.
Brown lip liner and chokers, but the writing chokers was funny.
Chokers say, like, sexy and Diamante.
Oh, my God. The writing was funny. I mean, there's no funding at this point for a glossy love interest, so, you know, you had to opt for an unknown, some skinny guy, maybe studying, like, philosophy. But the writers suddenly felt that there needed to be more jeopardy.
Yes, so in comes the bad boyfriend, right?
The bad boyfriend.
But it's only in season two where we think, hang on, wasn't this meant to be a rom-com? When did it turn into a horror show?
Season two was very, very stressful.
Well, the writers obviously decided, now it's like big name writers, they're being paid and they wanted to earn their crust. So maybe they decided the storyline needed to take a dramatic turn for the worse. So they had the bad boyfriend turn you into a raving fucking lunatic.
Oh God, so much crying.
Yeah, the optimist from the pilot is dead and buried by now, right?
Also, no one liked season two.
No, right? Terrible reviews, season two.
Everyone was like, season two sucked.
Where's the charm?
Oh, none of it. Season three.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're a bit more independent.
The again. Independent years.
the bad boyfriend is written out of the show. See you later.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't too happy, but your character was undergoing some changes and needed to move on. So this season, where are you? Living in a shared flat.
Yes, with girlfriends, working hard, playing hard, smoking too many fags and dreaming big. Like, back to pilot situation, basically.
Oh, you're dreaming again. So maybe it would end with you declaring that you were now going to buy your own house.
Yay! Okay, so now what's going to happen in season four?
Season four, clearly, after that declaration, is going to be a gritty, searing psychodrama and not for the faint-hearted. I mean, we're almost in film noir territory, to be honest.
But no glamour. No glamorous smoking, crying in the rain like Jan Seberg or any of those.
Yeah. Because of course you haven't been able to buy a house. You don't have any money. But these overpaid writers are feeling clearly...
Hate the writers.
Oh, fucking... I was about to say a very bad word. Yeah, hate the writers. but they clearly feel that you must struggle to come to terms with your idiotic, romantic notions about life and face some home truths.
I know, and you're literally sitting there just going, why hasn't my life been written by Disney? Cute dresses, cute boys, you're highly intelligent...
No, talking sorry. Pets.
And highly intelligent talking pets.
Highly intelligent talking pets. Final episode. It's been a huge hit. Final episode, and you find you've gone full method. Life and art have merged, and you hear the writers in your head all the time.
There is a film like that where the writers like speak down to the characters who are like going, please could you stop doing this to
me? You
can't
sleep. You go properly mad at full moon. You roam around the house, never being able to find your keys. You jump out of your skin and scream every time your phone rings.
It was at this point she realised the only choice she had left was to lie down for the next 5 years.
So the show goes dark, right? Nothing to see here until you... The reunion. There you are, wanting to put the past behind you. You know, you forget about the bad boyfriend.
The flatmate who ruined your favourite dress.
The best friend who turned out to be a narcissist.
The writers want to bring everyone back together for this final showdown so that everyone can lay their ghost to rest.
Yeah, they didn't promise they can't get hold of you because you're not answering your emails and you've muted their WhatsApps and you don't pick up their calls.
Yeah, that'll teach them to fuck with you.
I mean, frankly, after everything we've learned this past year and a half, the story of you could probably have just been an email, right?
So true.
I mean, what if life were just an email? So we now know that most of the thousands of meetings we have pitched up for in our lives could have been emails, right? I mean, all that sweaty commuting and wiping of damp upper lips on the way in, all those security passes and battling over whether to turn the air conditioning up or down or on or off, all those presentations and round tables... They could all have been emails. Or at a stretch, Zooms. We didn't have them, but Zooms. Faxes. So since March 2020, we've been Zooming and typing and snoozing and calling and walking and talking and attempting to remotely prove our worth whilst also feeling completely worthless. And it's all confirmed that one truth. That, this is depressing. Almost our entire working lives could have been an email. So why go back?
Yeah.
But the trouble is, if your professional lives could have merely been a series of emails, then maybe our romantic lives could have just been a series of emails. So maybe this marriage could have been an email, or maybe our friendships could have been cultivated and grown and nurtured over emails. And trying new foods could have happened only via restaurant delivery and online grocery orders. Our shopping, interiors, clothes, beauty, could all have been just virtual and transactional. Sex, apps and vibrators. Health, classes via the laptop, Zoom doctor's appointments with DIY blood tests. So since life boiled itself down to just emails and video calls, we've now realised how many years of our life we've wasted just running from pillar to post and resenting it all the while. But, Here's the but, daunting though the big return to real life continues to be, it's only the prospect of life with no texture that makes us want to dive back in. Because I guess some of us, it's dawning on us, we're starting to understand that you're, like with everything, we have to take the rough with the smooth.
Mm.
So in isolation, I guess that meant missing human company, but also having loads of time to yourself to watch telly or read a book. And it meant staying in every night and yet feeling more and more exhausted. Life, when it's only an email, is like a tiring panorama. Because it's no threat to our alone time, but there's also no nutrition in it, so you do nonetheless waste away. Which I suppose is why even the most reluctant of us, and I'm the most reluctant of us when it comes to going out and seeing people, I'm really scared. Even I am twitching at the curtains of being out in the world. You know, incremental steps. A walk might turn into a coffee might turn into lunch. We may not be able to deal with changing rooms in shops, but it's quite fun to kind of finger the fabric before we buy something, or smell a candle, or have a chat with the person in the shop. And I think it's these micro connections rather than the big scary parties and massive, incredibly expensive, inconvenient conferences. It's these micro connections that remind us that life isn't an email. And it reminds us that while virtual life has been a godsend, in the end, it probably isn't enough.
No, it probably isn't. You know what troubles me, or one of the many millions of things that keep me up at night, is how do we know if we're doing any of it right?
Yeah.
How do we know if we're doing this right? How do we know, you know, we're joking about Pilot Us and season one and season two, but it does feel like we are, you know, simultaneously in charge of our lives and also totally at the mercy of like psychotic writers.
Which is incredibly panic inducing, because we're always convinced, aren't we, at 3 a.m, that terrible feeling in the pit of our stomachs that we're doing something wrong.
Yeah. And that there was a better way of doing things. And I feel like you get stuck in these like corridors of, is this the right door that I should have gone through? Is this the right door I should have gone through? You know, emotionally, you know, physically, etc.
Yeah. And then suddenly you're just covered in shame and guilt.
Yeah. And it's this sort of endless perfection. I mean, you know, regular listeners will know about my sort of perfection issues, but it is really problematic in the sense that not only am I worried about going forward in terms of getting it right, but I'm also still replaying whether or not I crave a kind of, and we heard this term recently and I think it's really useful, I crave a kind of moral perfectionism where I could go back to everything I did and get a sort of clean slate.
A clean moral slate, and all the mistakes that we've made wouldn't concertina up on us and just continue to press that bruise. So that just makes you think about all the other perfectionisms that we suffer from.
God, I know exactly. Like, I've got total riposte perfectionism. Now, so this is the futile hope that one day I will be able to reach into my brain and pluck out the perfect riposte in a timely fashion. Now, this could be sweeping the table clear and throwing down a map and saying, I've got a plan, or telling some kind of, you know, man situation exactly why his brand of casual ignorance is not going to work.
You'd throw some devastating grenade at your ex-boyfriend. You'd just pulverise your horrible boss, devastate the insulting sexist. And it would also render redundant that just annoying, mortifying process of going back through arguments in the shower and winning them after the fact. Like a long, long time after the fact.
Yeah, like 22 years.
22 years after the fact, just as a for instance.
Exactly. What about ambiance perfectionism?
I can't believe you've used that word.
I know, I'm sorry.
With the French pronunciation.
Well, I mean, that is obviously a given.
Yeah, is it too hot? Is it too cold? Is it too light? Is it too dark? Too bright? Too glary? Glowy enough? Cushions? How many cushions? Too many cushions? Would you like to sit at the table? Would you like to sit soft? Inside, outside? Would you like a lie down? I mean, is there ever a moment's peace in the quest for the ultimate...
No.
The ultimate...
Oh, sorry. Ambiance.
Yeah, in a word, there is not.
Or non.
Non.
There just isn't. It's awful. And I think as well, what about insomnia perfectionism?
Well, I mean, 99% of our conversations are about sleep, right?
Yes. Yeah, so I think that the perfect insomnia conversation will be in the desire to fully and specifically articulate how little sleep you got,
yep,
between what hours you were awake, what chemical / holistic assistance you had or didn't have, and the thoughts that troubled you in the process.
Yes. And you expect full... aural, full listening cooperation from your interlocutor, but no fucking feedback. Please don't give me any suggestions.
Absolutely no suggestions. Thank you very much.
No.
No.
I don't want to know what you think.
No. Or what you're taking that will help you. Only in the context of your story.
Yes, you will have your moment.
Yes.
To talk about your insomnia.
Exactly. And then we can just move on. All right. Other perfectionisms. Okay, liquid perfectionism. That is another quest, which is just exhausting.
Yes, the precise amount of liquid, any liquid, water, tea, coffee, alcohol, straight CBD, the exact right amount of liquid to ingest in order to feel good, but not too good. Awake, but not too awake. Funny, but not too funny. Relaxed, but not like floppy. Almost there. Are you almost there? Have you almost got it right? Oh, now you need to pee.
Always need to pee. Do you know, the other day, I was really down to the bottom of my CBD, so I actually chugged it out of the bottle, as opposed to, because I couldn't get the pipette. You know, pipette perfectionism is another one.
Never let it be said you're not still a rock star.
So rock and roll. Swigging CBD from the bottle. You know, speaking of rock and roll, what about journal perfectionism?
Yes. What, you mean the actual physical notebook?
Yes. Is this the perfect journal for my best and brilliant thoughts?
Or is this the best journal for... this the perfect journal for your best and most brilliant thoughts?
Does it have a soft cover?
A4, a little bit smaller than that. A5.
Does it have a witty slogan or an inspirational quote on the front?
Yeah, I mean, you have more stationery than W.H. Smith's, and yet you have failed to manifest anything at all. Anything. Hang on, maybe we're just manifesting notebooks.
Dear God.
Oh, my God, it's exhausting. Perfectionism is exhaustive. It's another stick in your famous cupboard of sticks.
Yeah.
That we can just pull out and beat ourselves with.
Yeah, and it's absurd. Like, there is never going to be the perfect anything. I wish I could let go of that.
All idea. This stuff and everything that's happened in the last year has just given me an unhealthy taste of what it might be like to completely retire from life. And a large part of me feels that it's the way forward, because a lot of the time I feel 90. I do. Emily and I were away last week on a writing retreat, trying to get a new project off the ground, which we'll tell you about when we can. And we were sitting out working, and it was early evening, and I heard these teenagers sort of gently carousing, you know, just chatting really, as they sort of, you know, zigzag down the street. And only 5 years ago, I would have thought, shut up, teenagers carousing on the street. And now I thought, it's the young people having a lovely time.
The youth. They're so glowy. Also, it was 8:30 and we were actually in bed. But anyway, moving on. Do you know that ways in which I feel 90 include my love of a sturdy shoe?
Well, when you say sturdy, for full clarification, really you mean kind of orthopedic / ergonomic, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, clearly...
Are we allowed to say remedial? Because that is what it is.
No.
Remedial shoe.
I don't think we're allowed to say remedial.
Okay, apologise to anyone who's offended by...
I mean, obviously, we haven't been able to walk any distance further than from a doorstep to a car in high heels since our 20s. But, I mean, I'd sort of thought that maybe a trainer or a sandal was enough. But no, look what happened to you.
No, I thought a trainer would see me through the rough from now on. And actually, it's not true. And I've got runner's heel, even though I don't run. And now I have got some incredible shoes from Fit Flop, which are basically like, they say they're like yoga in a shoe, but honestly, the comfort is insane. And now
there's always a problem with the foot, isn't there? Whether it's a runner's heel, a bunion, an ingrown toenail, a sore sort of ball of your foot from all the walking.
Yeah, all the walking to stave off the nervous breakdown, which didn't quite happen, but it instead caused a foot breakdown. So now I've got orthopedic shoes.
I mean, we really are 90. I heard myself saying to somebody a few days ago, "Can I borrow your eyes? I was someone under the age of 30. Because I couldn't find something. But what I also realised is it isn't my eyes. My eyes are fine. It's more worrying than that. It's my brain. It's because I don't know where I've put anything ever.
No, can't remember anything. I have to say it is my eyes, because I actually heard myself say to someone the other day, "Get out of my light," as I was trying to read something. Like, it was sort of... And I practically need like an interrogation lamp in order to read any document, or the brightness on my Kindle is way up. I mean, it's just a joke.
Well, I mean... Okay, I have a head torch, which I use to do my needlepoint, said the 300-year-old woman. I tell you another way I know I'm 90 is because I've come to the conclusion that all politicians are idiots. I mean, I'll take a side if pressed, like on election day, but I'm just sure they're all idiots. I used to get annoyed with my mother for just saying I'm sick of the lot of them. I thought it was apathetic and irresponsible, but I mean... They're all idiots, right?
I know. You get to a point where, completely. And also what's amazing is that you get to the point where not only are you worried that you're going to turn into your mother, you are actually your mother.
Oh, yes, that ship has sailed.
I mean, it's just there.
What
about when it rains?
Yes, Annabelle? I looked out the window this morning, pouring with rain again. And when it rained in the past, when I was young, I used to think, oh, my hair, I'd go frizzy, I'd go flat. And now I just think, oh, that'll be good for the garden.
I know, you actually walked out in like torrential weather the other day.
I mean, the apocalyptic sort of King Lear downpour, and I just thought, you know, this will be good for the garden and possibly for my sanity. In fact, it was possibly good for the garden, but no good at all for my sanity.
The other thing that is really depressing me is the fact that technology is now escaping you. Do you remember when we used to be on top of all that sort of technology stuff? Now, for some reason, I'm always like on mute in Zoom to the kind of hysteria of all the people under 30 in the meetings that I go to. And I'm thinking, oh God, how's this happened? Also, I'm always the last to leave. So the last thing you see ever on a Zoom meeting is my face going, ah!
Scrambling around for the leave button. I've got my finger hovering over the leave button for the entire meeting.
Basically, you just want an ejector seat for life.
Yes. Yes, I do. I wouldn't have to walk away from anybody. In fact, it would be... I just wouldn't be there anymore. Poof.
Oh, my God.
I would have gone home to watch telly. I mean, we watch all of the telly, but because we're 90, can't remember any of the plots. I mean, The Undoing, Unforgotten, Mare of Easttown. It's all just very murdery, and there seems to be quite a lot of Nicole Kidman. And also, I always Google the plot, so I don't get any nasty surprises.
So do you actually know... See, I'm terrified to have a conversation about television now, just in case I... like give away a major spoiler.
Oh, I don't care. I'm 19.
See, I will not look at anything. But what I then do is once the series is finished, I go deep down into, and I go, oh, that's where that person's from. Or, oh, I remember him when he was in, you know, that kind of thing. I remember her. Yeah, but
that's what you do with your evenings.
So
what
exciting.
I do with my evenings is I go online and I shop to add to my collection of hospital nighties. I realise I'm not shopping for nightwear for sex anymore. I'm shopping for nightwear for impending hospital stays because, you know, there's stuff in the post, right? I'm particularly worried at the moment about falling down the stairs.
Oh, my God. I'm wandering around in a Victorian kind of nightie at the moment. Not actually right now, but there's something very reassuring about knowing that you could take this from bed to hospital without
like
worrying.
A large pant.
Oh, my God, the pants.
Just when we thought pants couldn't get any bigger.
They got bigger. I mean, I really want a pant that goes from basically my knees to my neck.
A full body pant?
Yeah, why not?
Ideal, right?
Yeah.
Just to cover all the oldness. I feel like even my earlobes are old.
Oh my God, my tattoos, which I thought represented how sort of hip I was going to remain for the rest of my life, are now literally... It's wrinkly.
Wrinkly and crinkly.
Yeah, exactly. It's a dislocated hip.
This is now a competition to see who's older. I have a pillbox with a section for each day of the week, but I can't close the lids of the pillbox because there are so many pills, supplements, that they're flowing out of each section. I mean, I've got 8 in this little pot here. I've already taken about 12. Why are pills so big?
Oh my God, they're so big. Also, you know, if you get it, if you get the angle wrong, you take one of those things and it lodges itself like perpendicular to your...
Sort of just above your sternum, and then it releases little puffs of toxic dust throughout the day.
They're so huge.
If I get a pill lodged in my, you know, down at the top of my chest, I can't be normal until it's gone. Well, relatively normal, obviously. Yeah.
I love that. I love the idea that we can ever be normal again.
Well, I've started to base myself in bed.
Well,
bed is where the magic doesn't happen, right? It's my office. It's my solace. It's just, why would I ever, ever be anywhere else?
I know, but also most of the time I just can't be bothered to talk anymore.
No, I sort of slightly feel like maybe I've said everything I have to say in this life.
Also, everything is too long. Sorry, this is like a prime indication. I sound again like my mother, God bless her. But, you know, it's all like, how is this? How is the movie too long? How is the television programme too long?
Now, does anyone else believe to their absolute core that 1 hour and 30 minutes is the optimum length for a film, and anything else is madness?
Yeah, madness. Who commissions anything beyond, like, anything longer than
and
that?
And you know what a clock watcher I am. So however good it is, as soon as it starts ticking over the 90-minute sweet spot, I'm sweating and panicking, and then I just start to question anything. You know, why am I like this? Why are they like this? Is this supposed to be good? Am I the problem? I mean, clearly I am the problem.
Am I the problem? I know. Are we the problem, Annabelle?
Well, just then, you know, the credits start to roll on our existential crises. You know, books that are over 400 pages, series that have more than 6 seasons. I just find myself, well, when someone goes, how was it? I go, well, it went on a bit. Dinners, lunches, exercise classes, too long. This podcast?
Too long.
Too long. I think it's time. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Bye.
See you soon. You've been listening to Annabelle Rifkin and Emily McMeekin of The Midult. Our book, I'm Absolutely Fine, is out now. If you like what you hear, please rate, review and subscribe.
And just a reminder, because who remembers anything, Readly is offering you 2 months free if you sign up today using our link, readly.com/themidult. And we'll just leave you with this thought. Just because something's a problem doesn't mean it's your problem.